This talk is on the effect of confinement on the stability of the Rankine vortex with axial flow. Let me start by defining what I mean by the Rankine vortex. Let's start by looking at the azimuthal velocity. You can see that in the central fluid here, we have solid body rotation at angular velocity omega, whereas in the outer fluid, we have a line vortex-like decay of azimuthal velocity. Now let's look at the axial velocity profile. We have some velocity in the middle, u1, and the outer fluid on the outside moving at u2. Now there's always a finite shear between u1 and u2, which means that this flow will always be unstable to the Kelvin-Helmholtz instability. But in terms of the azimuthal velocity, the central core is neutrally stable, which means that it can support inertial waves running along the core, and the outer flow is marginally stable, which means that its growth rate is zero, but any slight change in the velocity profile will result in the growth rate either increasing or decreasing from zero. And finally, let me introduce two length scales. The first of them is the radius of the inner fluid. The second of them is the annular gap, it's the thickness of the outer fluid. And now, three parameters here. First of all, the lambda is the axial shear, defined as the velocity difference axially to the average of the two axial velocities times 2. We have h, which I define as the confinement, h2 divided by h1, and the swell number here, which is omega, the angular velocity, times h1, the radius of the inner fluid, divided by the axial velocity difference between the two flows. Now this talk is motivated by swirling round flows of the sort that you might find in a model aeroplane injector. But before I get to that, I want to review some results from planar flows at the top of the page. When we look at a planar flow, we obviously lose the swirl, which means that we just have two parameters now in the problem. The first of them is lambda, which I actually tend to write as 1 divided by lambda, and then the other one is the confinement h. Now, lambda is essentially giving us the type of flow. Everything to the left of zero is a wake flow. Everything to the right of zero, everything positive, is a jet flow. Furthermore, everything to the left of minus 1 is coflow. Similarly, everything to the right of plus 1 is coflow. And everything in the middle between minus 1 and plus 1 is a counterflow. So this gives us a sort of spectrum of all possible flows, from jets to wakes, coflow to counterflow. And on the vertical axis of this chart, I plotted confinement. So at the top, where h is equal to 10, this is weakly confined. In other words, the outer wall is a long way away. H2 is very much bigger than h1. And at the bottom, where h is equal to 0.1, this is strongly confined. In other words, the outer wall is very, very close to the interface between the outer fluid and the inner fluid. Now on this chart, I've shown the regions of absolute instability. The regions in light blue are the regions that are absolutely unstable to the single shear layer. So each individual shear layer will always be absolutely unstable in counterflow, which accounts for this light blue region here. But there is another instability mode where both shear layers act in concert with each other. The mode here is shown for sinuous, so both shear layers are moving up and down, synchronized with each other. And this flow is absolutely unstable in the dark blue region. So that's what I call the jet wake mode, and that's absolutely unstable in the middle. Now what's particularly interesting here is that some coflow wakes, or for coflow wakes at just the right values of confinement, you have this nose of absolute instability. So if you were to confine a coflow wake with a uniform density here and have the velocity profile such that you were somewhere in this nose, you'd have locally absolutely unstable flow, and that might be enough to get you a global mode. And just as an aside, I've shown this here for uniform density fluids. What we find is that as we get to a higher density wake, this nose gets larger and larger, extends further into the coflow wake region. Now we can repeat this analysis for the axisymmetric case. In this case, once again, we just have two parameters. One of them is confinement, h2 divided by h1, and the other one is 1 over lambda, where lambda is the shear ratio already defined. So we have the same axes here. In this case, though, the flow is axisymmetric, and we're looking here at the m equals 1 mode, which is directly analogous to the flapping mode in the planar case. And we see much the same thing. We see this nose of absolute instability poking into the co-flow weight region, but that everywhere else the flow is absolutely unstable to the single shear layer mode before it becomes absolutely unstable to the coupled mode, except for this nose of absolute instability. Now this, locally, is a model for the flow you get in a rocket engine. In rocket engines, you typically inject a jet of liquid oxygen inside a much faster jet of gaseous hydrogen, which means you have a dense wake situation. And rocket designers have discovered that if you pull the jet of liquid oxygen back inside the jet of hydrogen, you get much better jet breakup, much better mixing, much better combustion efficiency. And this could be because we're stimulating, in this region here, local absolute instability, which is strong enough to act as a wave maker for a global mode, thereby giving rise to better jet breakup and better combustion efficiency. Now, the motivation of this talk is to look at swirling round flows simply by taking the previous model here and swirling the inner flow. Now, I'll briefly explain how we do this. In the local analysis, we look at wave numbers k and angular frequencies omega. What I've plotted here at the top left is contours of omega I, that's the imaginary part of omega, which is the growth rate, in k space, in complex k space. So on the bottom axis I have k real, on the vertical axis I have k imaginary. And the origin is here, and the real k axis extends from left to right. Now, in working out the impulse response, you would integrate from k real being minus infinity to k real being plus infinity. And you'd stay along the real k axis to do that. Now, that integral is worked out more easily by deforming the integration path so that it passes over a number of saddle points. In other words, so that it takes the lowest possible path from minus infinity to plus infinity. And we pass over a number of saddle points all the way along the axis, and this one saddle point I've marked S1 in the middle. Now, in the long time limit, the impulse response is dominated by the highest saddle point on the integration path. And then there are also subdominant saddle points. Those are regions of local maximum omega I, but that are nonetheless not the highest omega I on the integration path. Now, by doing this, we can build up a picture of the impulse response, which is shown underneath. So we apply an impulse at time 0 and position 0, and we see how the flow responds to that impulse. And what we're plotting here is rays x over t and r over t in the long time limit. And we can see the contribution in the middle here from the shear layer saddle S1, and the contribution at the back, which comes from the wake jet modes, which are saddle S2a. There's also an area in the middle where we get contributions from saddle S2b, S2c, etc. Now, this impulse response is for a co-flow jet, where the inner flow has a lower density than the outer flow, but what you find is that the contribution from saddle S1 is convectively unstable. In other words, it's always being convected downstream, as you see by the fact that x over t is always positive, whereas the contribution from saddle S2a is going back upstream, as you see by the fact that x over t is negative, and this is giving rise to absolute instability. But the main point to take away from this is that to get the behavior of the flow, all we have to do is follow saddle points that lie on the integration path. Now, that's what I've done in the two pictures on the right. We're looking here at a jet flow with m equals minus 2. M is the azimuthal wave number. It defines the shape of the deformation of the interface. And with swirl equal to 0, the saddle points lie here and here. And I've shown the omega I contours at that value of swirl equal to 0. Now, as the swirl increases, we find this saddle here going round to here, that's the swirl at 4, and the saddle at the bottom moves over to the left. And I track these saddle points as I vary the value of swirl, and then periodically check that they lie still on the integration path. Now, that was for a jet. Underneath I've shown a wake flow for m equals minus 2, and here we find there's just one saddle point on the integration path, and that as we increase the swirl from 0 to 4, it moves over from left to right. Now, you'll notice that saddle points such as this one up here in the top right figure can lie to the left of the ki axis. Now, there's nothing wrong with that, it just corresponds to a part of the wave packet that grows in the cross-stream direction. I won't say any more about those sorts of saddle points, except to note that they have a particularly a profound effect on weakly confined flows. Nevertheless, the rest of this talk will be on flows that have moderate confinement, where H is of order 1, so I won't say any more about that now. So I'm going to jump straight away to the results, first of all, on the left, for unconfined swirling jets. So on the horizontal axis we have 1 over lambda, and I'm just looking between 0 and 2.5, so everything to the left of 1 is a counterflow jet, everything to the right of 1 is a coflow jet, and on the vertical axis I have swirl. So I'm going from 0 swell up to a swell number of 5. And what we see is that as the swell number increases, the m equals minus 1, then m equals minus 2, then m equals minus 3 mode becomes more unstable. Every azimuthal mode has a moment where it's the most unstable mode, but that on the whole it's only very slightly absolutely unstable to coflow jets. Normally you have to have a counterflow in order for the flow to be absolutely unstable, and of course for a counterflow it's always absolutely unstable to the single shear layer. But now let's see what happens when we confine this flow. So I'll look at the second case in the middle with a confinement h equal to 1, which is roughly the geometry shown there. Now we've got the same axes on this figure, but we see that the m equals minus 1 mode is now absolutely unstable well into the coflow jet region, in this region here. Similarly, as we increase the swirl, we find that the m equals minus 2 mode takes over for a region of coflow jets, then the m equals minus 3, etc., until the m equals minus 4 and minus 5 are relatively unaffected. And as we increase the confinement still further up here, we find that this nose of absolute instability to the m equals minus 1 mode has extended very considerably into the coflow jet region. And furthermore, we note the interesting result that for a certain confinement, there's a sort of optimum value of swirl. If you put too little swirl in, you fall into this region of convective instability. If you put too much swirl in, you fall into this region of convective instability. To get maximum absolute instability, you want to stick in just the right amount of swirl. And this sort of information is very useful to fuel injector designers who might want to design in absolute instability in order to get good breakup of the two flows that they're trying to mix. Repeat this analysis for wake flows. Here on the left we have an unconfined wake flow. Once again I've plotted 1 over lambda on the bottom axis, this time running from 0 to minus 2.5. Everything to the left of minus 1 is a coflow wake, everything to the right of minus 1 is a counterflow wake, and I've got the same axis on the vertical side, which is the swirl. And we see that for coflow wakes, as we increase the swirl, first of all the m equals minus 1 mode becomes more absolutely unstable in the coflow wake region, then the m equals minus 2, then the m equals minus 3, etc. But that once again we find it's only a very, very thin amount of absolute instability on the coflow wake side. Now when we add confinement, as we do here for a confinement of 1, we find that the m equals minus 1 mode on the coflow wake side goes particularly absolutely unstable. There's a large nose of absolute instability for the m equals minus 1 mode, and that actually this dominates throughout the whole flow at this value of confinement. Even if you increase the swirl further, it's still at the top, the m equals minus 1 mode, that dominates. But interestingly, as we increase the confinement further, we find that this m equals minus 1 mode, the blue one here, becomes convectively unstable again, and that we've sort of killed off that region of absolute instability that we had at a confinement value of 1. Nevertheless, at higher swirls we can see that we have managed to make the flow more absolutely unstable than in the unconfined case. Now again, this is very useful information for fuel injector designers who are trying to design in absolute instability, because it shows them that a confinement of 1, for example, is particularly good. You've got a large region of absolute instability in the coflow wake side, but that if you overcook it, you'll end up going back to being convectively unstable, even when you add swirl. I'm going to do the same analysis, but present the data in a different way. On the left we have the unconfined Rankine vortex wake, as we had before, with swirl on the vertical axis and 1 over lambda on the horizontal axis, running from 0 to minus 2.5. You'll note that at the value minus 1, which is where the inner flow is it's rotating but it hasn't got any axial velocity, we can see that the flow goes absolutely unstable at that value of swirl, then that value of swirl about 1.3, then up here to the m equals 3 mode at about 2.5, and so on. And what I've done in the picture on the right is put confinement onto the vertical axis and swirl onto the horizontal axis, and I'm looking at a wake flow with 1 upon lambda equals minus 1. So we see that when the flow is weakly confined, we pick up the transition to absolute instability at this value of swirl of about 0.3. For the m equals 2, it's at about 1.3. For m equals 3, at about 2.3, which are the same values that we saw on the figure on the left. But we see now that when we confine the flow more and more, that we move in this direction, that the m equals minus 1 mode and the m equals minus 2 mode become strongly absolutely unstable. The growth rate of the absolutely unstable mode in this region is fairly large. And of course, as we increase the swirl, this growth rate of the absolutely unstable mode grows even further. Now this is interesting because we actually have some numerical results in this region here. The picture at the top on the left shows an injector where the inner and the outer flows are injected flush, i.e. in the same plane. Now the flow isn't confined at all here, there's no pressure boundary, if you like, no velocity boundary, and so this can reasonably be modelled by an unconfined flow. And what we see in these isosurfaces of vorticity is just essentially a generic turbulent flow with large-scale structures around that sort of size. Now if we take exactly the same flow but inject the inner flow inside the outer flow so that we have here a recessed or a confined region, instead we see not just a turbulent flow but a turbulent flow with some very large vortical structures inside it. And these are very reminiscent of the nonlinear development of the m equals minus 1 mode. Now what's interesting is that this flow sits at a confinement of around 0.6 and a swirl number just less than 1 sits just there. This is where we'd expect the m equals minus 1 mode to be particularly absolutely unstable. Of course the m equals minus 2 mode is also absolutely unstable here, but it has a lower growth rate there, so we'd expect the m equals minus 1 mode to dominate. And it's interesting to see that fuel injectors seem to have evolved in order to exploit these regions of absolute instability to create large spiraling structures that give you good mixing between the two fuels. Now, if you were a fuel injector designer, you could use a simple model like the one that we've used to create the chart on the right to give you a good idea of the best place to start in your iteration process of designing a new injector. And that was very much the motivation for this study. To summarize, we looked first of all at jets, and we saw that if you get the right value of confinement and the right value of swirl, you can get a strong region of absolute instability in the co-flow jet region, which would be very useful to an injector designer. Then we looked at wakes, and we discovered that the same thing is true. You can get a strong region of absolute instability on the co-flow wake region, but that if you over-confine it, you kill off that region of absolute instability. Then we looked at large eddy simulation of a confined swirling wake flow sitting roughly here on the chart, i.e. in the region of strong absolute instability to the m equals 1 mode and to a lesser extent the m equals 2 mode, and we discovered that it does indeed have a strong m equals 1 mode, and this, what we see here is the nonlinear development of that m equals 1 mode. And where was this going? Well, it leads to a better understanding of the process involved in fuel injection, and it could represent the first step in obtaining simple design rules for gas turbine fuel injectors.